Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had an intellectually stimulating and useful and intelligent week. We are here for some political discussion and some intellectual discussion and some banter. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul, otherwise known as Tushy. Cheers, Catherine.
Yes.
Cheers, Lipton. Hurligan, Gurligan, K-Piss, Salu, Saludo.
Lachaim.
Frost, Lahayam, Yakidar, Skull,
Scrubianan,
Kirby Sexy, and Slanger, and Slangervar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, online public house, meets on Monday at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We discuss base science, stuff going on in the news, psychology, and stuff that's increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. And we have a very special guest for you today, and that is Catherine Blakelock. So, Catherine, would you mind awfully introducing yourself to the pub?
Yes. Hello. Good evening. Well, I was sort of a wishy-washy liberal and never voted until 2014. I was probably right-wing economically, but I just wasn't really interested in politics. I was interested in economics. And then Merkel opened the floodgates and I went, oh my goodness. And so that was when I joined UKIP and was in UKIP for a few years. I stood for UKIP in Great Yarmouth and became like their regional organizer. And then we had all this cabal for going on with Tory Robinson. And then we had Henry Bolton. And so I was already by that point looking at new names for parties. And I bought a number of names, Alternative for Britain, the Brexit Party, Our Country, these sort of names. And then I knew Nigel and I was setting up this. Well, he said, oh, I like the name the Brexit Party. So I set up the Brexit Party with sort of a gentleman's agreement with Nigel Farage, which I assumed would be fine. Unfortunately, in business, I wouldn't have done that. But in politics, I did that. And anyway, political legal agreements are pretty much impossible. And Nigel then made a lot of effort to get my shares, and because I held all the power and the bank accounts. And so there were a lot of tactics used to get my shares. And eventually I relented and then was basically thrown to the wolves and put into the political wilderness and did nothing until Rupert Lowe arrived, who ironically stood in Great Yarmouth in 2024. And that's when I got to know him. Before he had left Reform, or before Reform had did what they did to him. So I had met him and met him in Great Yarmouth and helped him a bit in Great Yarmouth. And then after what had happened to him when he was basically accused of, you know, all sorts of things and nearly sent to jail, I carried on talking to him, have been a staunch supporter right from the beginning. I live literally about 5 miles from the Great Yarmouth constituency. So I've been there about 20 days or more in the last month or so prior
and
to.
I hear that. So Slanger, Lord Quebec and Slangervar. I hear that Restore Britain have done rather well in the local elections in Yarmouth, yep, which for American viewers is East Anglia. So it's that bit that looks like a baby's head.
Yeah.
Yes, so how have they done?
We won 10 out of 10, 100%. We wiped out everybody. The average vote was about 48% across the 10 seats. Some of the seats were over 50% and on high turnover and on high postal votes. So we were out canvassing, we were out delivering leaflets and doing postal votes, and we were canvassing seriously. I mean, seriously, day after day. And I think it shows you, if you've got the right constituency, with the right manpower, with the right organisation, and there was a lot of manpower. So, you know, we had people from branches in Norfolk and in Great Yarmouth to start with, but then we had these action days when about 500 people turned up from everywhere, from Cornwall to Fife. It shows you what actually can be done and that the appetite is there.
So are you now the official opposition on Great Yarmouth Council?
I think it's no. Well, this was not a Great Yarmouth. This is Norfolk County Council. These are county council seats. So there was one borough council seat out of the nine, and the, so we are now the casting vote on the borough. That was a by-election. Local elections are a rule unto themselves, and they're going to be even more a rule unto themselves when we have unitary authority in a year. But basically, these are county council seats. So Reform basically haven't got a majority because of those nine seats.
Sorry, were all the seats? Sorry, this is a bit boring but and technical for viewers. But were all the seats up for grabs?
The seats in Norfolk, but Restore only stood in Great Yarmouth.
So oh, you only stood in one part of the.
So there's like eight or nine constituencies. So they stood just in that one. They didn't stand anywhere else nationwide. They concentrated their efforts into that area.
Right, so they won all of the Great Norfolk seats, Great Yarmouth seats.
Under a party called Great Yarmouth First, because when initially the local elections were coming up, Restore Britain wasn't even a registered party. So there was a locally registered party that they have stood under. Yeah.
Got it. Reminds me of when Pim Fortuyn stood under Lief Bar Rotterdam in Rotterdam, and then Lief Bar Netherlands in the Netherlands.
Is he Welsh, Ed?
Exactly, he is. Yes, all my impressions are Welsh. Well, let's go on to that. So, Paul, you're from Wales.
Yes.
This is the first time since 1906 that a sitting national leader has lost his or her seat on a council, on Parliament, has lost his or her seat. This hasn't happened since Arthur Balfour in 1906, that the First Minister of Wales, Elegon Ali, I don't know what, Morgan probably, was there a feeling on the ground that people were particularly annoyed in Wales?
Oh yeah, but it's frying pan into the fire. If you've seen any Plaid Cymru people speaking, it's more woke technocratic rubbish. But it was great to see the Welsh leader go down, because she was a female version of Keir Starmer with slightly more charisma. She spoke 100% fluent technocratic ease. She was awful. And they're just so divorced, you know, they've lost the values. That is just beyond belief. And irony of ironies, it's like Shakespearean irony, isn't it? It's all come under a prime minister called Keir.
Yes, perhaps the first and last serious leader of the Labour Party will be called Keir.
Yeah, he's finished them off. So I like the way history works in beautiful symmetrical cycles.
I also like that. And I like the idea that his speech today, it's purely technocratic. It's these are the rules.
And just a very obvious point, for someone who's done public speaking and was a barrister for all those years, the number of times he says it's terrible. If you see yourself doing things on camera, it's very easy to stop saying because it's really obvious you do it. So how he can keep doing it after seeing himself do it that many times is quite remarkable.
That's a good point. It's so easy. It's so easy. It's like this documentary I was watching on Netflix the other day with my wife called Should I Marry a Murderer? And the girl kept saying, I was like this, and he was like that, and I was like this. I was just think of something else to say. Just think of some other way of expressing it. If you see yourself on camera saying like a lot, then surely you think you shouldn't do it. But it's shown that they've lost everything, even in Wales. They're reduced to a tiny little party of about eight seats or something like that. They're not even the third or fourth largest party in Wales. And then they lost Scotland. And now we have this weird pressure where it seems to me that the Prime Minister must just be in denial or something like this. The thing that made me think he was in denial was the getting out Harriet Harman, her of the paedophile information exchange, you know, broader umbrella group, and Gordon Brown. This is what David Cameron did when he realised he was losing. He got David Cameron out to give.
Oh, Ed, I think you're being completely unfair. If you really want to radically change and shake things up and move forward into the future, why on earth wouldn't you pick Gordon Brown and Harriet Harman?
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, they're both at least in their 70s and
very forward-looking people. And if you need to sell off our gold reserves at rock-bottom prices again, what's left of them, Gordon will step up.
Or help out people who are involved in man-boy love.
And who else could protect women and young girls better than Harriet Pyman?
Exactly. Who else could protect women and young girls better than someone that had the paedophile information exchange as part of her umbrella organisation for which she was the lawyer? Who else? I have no idea. Well, Lipton.
My turn to speak, Ed.
Yes, it is.
People are lobbying for the Prime Minister to resign. Some aides have also resigned in protest. This is breaking news. It was just released a few minutes ago.
Oh, yeah. He seems to be under that kind. It's going to be that kind of Boris pressure that he was under, except I get the impression the Conservative Party are far more brutal with their leaders, and if they're no good, then they just kick them out straight away. Whereas, yes, Catherine.
Well, the irony is that Clive Lewis in Norwich South has said that he will step down to get Andy Burnham in, but Norwich went green for the first time. So he could step down and it could go green, and Andy Burnham still wouldn't get in if it was a by-election.
Yes, this happened, didn't it, in the 60s when there was a guy called Patrick Gordon Walker and he was the Member of Parliament for Smethwick. And he lost his seat in the election to a guy called Peter Griffiths, whose whole campaign was a racist campaign, was an anti-black campaign. And so then they tried to find him. They kept him as foreign secretary. And they tried to find him a seat and he lost two. I think he lost two by-elections. And then Wilson finally sacked him. So we can't go on like this. So that could happen. But the problem is that if Andy Burnham doesn't get in, then, and this is consistent with my Rayner effect research, I don't think there's anyone particularly intelligent in or of any gumption at all on the Labour front bench. Really, anybody that seems to have anything.
There is Rachel.
Who?
From accounts.
Rachel. Rachel.
Yeah, but Rachel cries in Parliament, so she comes across as weak. So as a rule, I mean, Mrs. Thatcher kept in her tears till right at the end when she finally cried.
Yeah, but Mahmood is the only competent one, and that's why they won't pick her.
Yeah, but Mahmood's foreign.
Yeah, well, ironically, she's the only one who therefore has the social capital to do something about illegal immigration, but won't be allowed to because of all the bleeding heart liberals on the back benches.
Yes, this is true. This is a very good point that you have to be, don't you, Lipton? It's kind of Lipton has come up with the concept, Catherine, of black privilege,
yes.
Which is that, yeah, if you're black, then everybody important wants to come on your show and everybody wants to talk to you and be seen with you because, you know, you're black. And I presume there's also I once got in trouble in a bar in Swindon for using the term black privilege to a Jamaican. I said, I have a Jamaican friend. He's come up with this concept of black privilege. And the Jamaican guy was like, that's really interesting. Tell me about it. I told him about it. And then I was told by the barwoman that this was an offensive term and I shouldn't use it. And a lot of people had overheard me and were upset.
I am happy that Catherine is a guest today because there is a burning issue, Catherine. I think that
immigrants for that, Lipton.
Do not receive welfare. Only third generation immigrants should receive welfare. So if you migrate to the UK, your grandchildren should be eligible for welfare, but not you, because the purpose of migrating is to improve yourself. You should not migrate to extract resources from the state.
But Lipton, that just encourages us to have children at the rate of Angela Rayner's family.
No,
and secondly, men in polygamous relationships, your second spouses should not be getting benefits.
No, well, you shouldn't really be having two spouses, should you? Well, this isn't,
baby mama tax.
Yeah. But this Angela Rayner, the thing, I think she's a fantasist. I've been looking into her background and she says that her mother was one of 12 kids and she wasn't. She was one of two. And I can prove it.
Well, she's innumerate.
Yeah, she is innumerate. So, but then, I mean, that's quite a substantial,
transpositional error, isn't it?
It's a very, very major problem with her mathematics if she confuses two with 12. I don't know how you could do that. but she's and then she this idea that her mother fed her dog food because she thought it was braising steak because of what the tin looked like. Well, the tin would have had a dog on it. So I don't believe that. I think she's exaggerating her poverty to get attention because she has some kind of disorder. I don't know what or her mother does. Yeah.
I want Catherine to speak more.
Yes, Catherine, okay. Speak more.
Yes, well, I'm just listening. I mean, obviously, I'm sort of new on this. I mean, I think the whole benefits issue is just a disaster anyway, whether you're white, black, third immigration or whatever. I mean, it's completely out of control. I mean, I can't remember the exact number, but just the fraud numbers are absolutely extraordinary. Something, you know, like I can't remember, but 30, but their numbers of bees, lots and lots of bees, and they end up, you know, like about 3% of these people ever get caught or pay anything back. And we have these examples, they just go on and on. The Bulgarian who got 58 million, the guy who said he had 178 children.
Catherine, can you be slightly careful, because I originally come from Liverpool.
But the black market is absolutely extraordinary. So, and it's not, in terms of working.
You were saying, Catherine, about these shops in Norwich that are all fronts. So can you tell us a bit about that? That's quite interesting.
Well, I've been looking at illegal cigarettes, which are just enormous. So, I mean, this again, you go back to the Conservatives. Between 21 and 24, the amount of duty collapsed by 50%. The number of legal cigarettes collapsed by 50%. They did four price rises, tax rises in that period, and they managed to do a Labour Party reduce the amount of revenue they collected. But they reduced the amount of revenue and the number of legal cigarettes went by half, and yet the number of smokers hardly moved. And so what happened to them? Well, this just absolutely explosion of counterfeit and no tax cigarettes. So we've got two types of things here. We've got absolute counterfeit, which will just kill you. I mean, cigarettes kill you, but these kill you 20 times faster. They even have spores that go in your lungs. They have 17 heavy metals and arsenic, and they're made of tobacco droppings and rat droppings and whatever else. And those are selling for £5 a packet compared to £16 for an ordinary packet. And
£16 for a packet of fags?
Yeah. I mean, the lowest, cheaper ones, maybe 14, but well, look at the rolling tobacco is even worse. So 50 grams of rolling tobacco, you know, Golden Virginia, is £46 now. And you can buy the fake stuff for £5.
Doesn't that just push people onto heroin?
Well, no, it pushes them
seriously,
to
with that price, God.
Yeah, but it pushes 50% of the 30 to 50% of the population are buying illegal cigarettes.
And well, when quite I right. If you're going to charge £16 for a packet of how many? What, 50?
20.
20? What the bloody hell happened since I gave up smoking?
Yeah, well, this is the Conservatives put tax up four times. I mean, it'd been going up and up anyway, but they put it up four times. But this is just part of the state not being out of control. So, you know, we've got the whole state, you know, controlling, people going 33 miles in a 38 mile an hour speeding area, and, you know, other minor infractions, including tweets that they do. And yet they've got this rampant £3 billion industry. I mean, that I've calculated it's £10 million just in a tiny area like Great Yarmouth. You can imagine, you've seen the Green councillor with all his cars. I mean, where do you get all this money from? And I assumed it'd be difficult, you know, to find these places. And I went to Great Yarmouth with a couple of guys, and we just parked the car and we went to the first shop we saw, and it took 2 minutes. We even paid for some of them on a bank card. I mean, we've got a receipt.
But Catherine, I think you're being unreasonable when you think the British Constabulary has a lot on its plate, having to arrest people at home for nasty tweets. How on earth could they be expected to control stuff like that?
Well, we went to 30 shops in a day, and we just went one after the other. We met a couple of Indian shops that didn't sell them, credit to them. But everybody else was Asian or Middle Eastern. The Kurds are the big people in it. And they've just been expanding. And then they go in, obviously, I mean, I think that this is where we've got the drugs, the barber shops. I've actually even considered bugging barber shops and translating what's going on in a week. Because nobody does anything about it.
Catherine, let me tell you why your arguments are so interesting. So since I've been in the UK, I've recognized that the Kurdish people, their barbershops are quite cheap. Why? Obviously, they're making money from somewhere else.
Yeah.
I went to a shop in a Moldovan shop, apparently, in Sparbrook in Birmingham. And the guy that was, first of all, the guy that was behind the till whatever wasn't Moldovan. He was some Kurdish boy. He told me he was Kurdish. And secondly, there was almost nothing for sale. There was bare shelves. There was a toilet roll here, and some washing up liquid over here. But hardly anything. Like it was the Soviet Union or something. And I said to him on film, we didn't use it, but I said to him, "Excuse me, I'd like to launder £5,000. Could you help me?" And he said, "What?" I said, "It was nothing." But it was just an off the cuff thing. But it was obvious to me that shop was not a legitimate shop. That shop was doing something, whether it was laundering money, because it had to pay the rates somehow. There's rates you've got to pay on a shop, and they can be expensive. Even in a suburb of Birmingham like Sparbrook or Spark Hill, it's pricey. So you've got to justify the rent. So there's no way that shop, which had hardly anything there other than knickknacks imported from Moldova, was doing anything. I must have been selling something under the counter. I can't remember whether my colleague asked. Oh yeah, we were filming in Birmingham, and he actually asked in one shop for the Romanian cigarettes, and they're under the counter, and he was sold them.
Asked for the cheap ones, and we got a bank, as I said, to let you pay on a bank card. It's just extraordinary. And I just said, I wrote a tweet, you know, "What are you doing, Norfolk Police? Because I've just managed, you could have had 30 arrests today instantly." And then we just tipped, that's the tip of the iceberg. But it's not that. I mean, we recorded this stuff, and somebody came behind us and said, "Have you got any of those?" You know, a woman said, "Have you got any of those things I like?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I've got three of them." Well, that's presumably ecstasy or some type of pill. And then obviously you've got drug selling, but we've also got all this. This interlinks with the illegals because this money is washed around. For example, I know in the Nepalese community that if you go to Harrow, or you can go to certain shops there, you can literally put £5,000, as you were talking about, give them £5,000, and you will get £5,000 in Nepalese rupees in Kathmandu minus 5%, literally in as long as it takes to send a WhatsApp.
Why would you want Nepalese rupees?
Because all the immigrants want to send the money home.
Oh, I see.
And they got it from wherever. So if you're working in cash, or you're working in this economy, you don't want this to go through the banking system.
Got you. By the way, I've got a much better word for interlinks with, Catherine. That is imbricates. So it's a word I'd like to popularise. Not a lot of people use it. Yes, that's very, very germane.
Again, I think Catherine's been very unreasonable, given that the vast majority of the illegal immigrants in the black market are actually engineers and doctors.
Well, this is going to be a new thing. It was fascinating.
So you can get an under-the-counter kidney.
Well, you can get a halal kidney. Do you know that? I mean, I've been doing stuff on halal, you know, Ed, with Robin Tilbrook. And when we started this 9 months ago, we thought that, you know, well, there's halal around, and we knew there was bits around. But when I got the first school that said, which was in Essex, which is all, they had one Muslim student and it was serving halal. And the headmaster said, "Well, what's the problem? It won't kill you," to the parent. We thought this was really sort of unique. But now I'm doing FOIs on all the schools, and I reckon we're going to come up with 50% of the schools in the nation are serving halal.
But on the plus side, at least there's no contradiction with the Green Party being full of Islamists and the Green Party being rabidly pro-animal rights.
Yes.
There's no contradiction at all.
Yeah. And then I just wanted to say a couple of ironies about halal, which I have tweeted, but nobody's picked up, because if I was Muslim, I wouldn't be very happy about this. So all these carcasses are stamped with a mark, and it's got alcohol in it on the halal meat, which I just thought was quite funny. And then the second thing is, when they do kosher slaughter, the bits that they reject, they often go to halal, which again... So you've had the Jews killing that lot, and then they go to the halal if what they've got left over. Again, I think that's sort of an irony.
So it's idle meat, though. If the meat's kosher, it's been a little prayer has been said over it, and so forth. So
the kosher, the problem with the kosher, which is very small in volume, but compared to the halal, which is enormous, is that they don't eat the hind quarters, so that goes back into the normal food chain always.
I didn't know that. Is that the case, that they don't eat like rump steak and stuff?
That none of it. After, like, I can't remember which rib, the sixth rib or something, seventh rib or something. Probably something Abrahamic.
Well, that's the problem. You are going to have trouble surviving if you're a fussy eater.
Anyway, but the big thing is the which is part of the same issue is you know, is the same, it's basically the state doesn't enforce anything at all except minor tweaks and parking tickets.
Right. So we're living in essentially an extremely corrupt state where the only thing that is really enforced, as you say, is political crime. So this is, you know, saying the wrong thing, political crime. That's rigorously enforced, but normal crime is not enforced.
Well, they enforce people who've got assets.
And so also, Catherine, sorry to interrupt, but the yes. parking issue, you get triple parking in Birmingham that isn't given tickets for, just observing.
Yeah, but the thing is that they're basically going after law-abiding people. So I've been looking at electricity and gas. So we have about the new wheeze is, oh, we have like billions that aren't paid. We have about a third of houses in arrears, serious arrears. But the big issue thing now is move into a house, don't put your name on, carry on living there for a year, and then move to the next place.
So, and I also understand that if Muslims declare that their sitting room is a prayer room, they don't have to pay council tax.
I heard that too, yeah. And then we've got people, we've got in numerical terms, again, nobody, I haven't seen this stuff. I mean, I'm starting to research it. It's just fascinating. In numerical terms, we have the same amount of electricity stolen as South Africa. We have about, and gas, we have about 250,000 people stealing gas and electricity. You're not talking about not paying bills. We're actually talking about bypassing, getting out of the lamppost or somewhere.
I mean, right, like that episode of Bottom, where they steal the neighbour's gas.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like that. But the weird thing is that when you go to normal third world countries, like third world countries that are honest about being third world countries, not Britain, like Mexico or somewhere, or India, then you can see they're stealing electricity because there's all of these extra power lines which manifest on the lamppost. You can also see it in Moldova. And everyone just accepts it, that people are so poor, they have to steal electricity. And that's it. We don't really see those extra power lines in the UK. At least not in areas
like... No, they're doing it via meters and getting around carb meters, and I'm not sure. I mean, and it's quite dangerous. A few people die, but that's a relatively still small amount compared to this. We've got, of course, the justice system is in chaos, so the electricity companies basically can't take people to court. And then they, you know, if they did take them to court, it takes forever, and they pay about £1 a year if you get that and this sort of stuff. So you have these, like, third of houses... Half of that third are just not paying at all. And if your name is Muhammad Khan, you just can't catch them. I mean, you don't put the name, you just make up a name. I mean, this is the issue. You just make up any name you like when you move into a house. There's no ID check. And then the same
thing. And they're all funny names, so no one's going
to
check.
Yeah, the same thing with electoral registers. I mean, I've been talking to Rupert Lowe about this. I mean, the Electoral Commission looked at it in 2023, and 20% of the electoral register isn't correct. It's people who are dead, as in America, we've seen lots of dead people. People have moved. People have got the wrong name. People who fraudulently put their names on multiple times in multiple places. So we don't have a national database. So there's nothing to say that Ed Dutton doesn't. Well, you're in Finland, but any of us to put our name on in multiple places, 10, 15 times. The only thing that's illegal is actually vote. But since you haven't got a national database, you can't work out who's voted anyway.
So then the whole electoral system is corrupted by
this. Because, for example, I can consider places, like if you were in Tower Hamlets and your name's Mohammed Khan and your cousin lives in Bradford, and then you've got another cousin in Rotherham, and you've got another cousin in Telford, and then your wife's cousin is in somewhere else, Rotherham, and then they all put their names on the electoral roll in your house as well.
To be fair, your wife's cousin is you.
I was going to say, Ed, but in Norfolk, there are whole streets with just one surname, so it does balance it up a little bit.
Normal for Norfolk. Do you know that? They still put it on hospital beds. When my daughter was trained, they put N NFN, which means normal for Norfolk. Well inbred.
What was your daughter? Did your daughter have sex with her cousin or something?
Yeah, well, they were all sort of out like that.
Okay.
No, not she wasn't normal for Norfolk. It's the patients there were putting it on the bed.
Patients are the patients for normal for Norfolk. Yeah, I understand the people in King's Lynn have curly teeth. That's what I was told that. If you're from King's Lynn, sorry, you know, if that's not
true.
Well,
because of their eight fingers, they can't type any insults. I wouldn't worry about it.
You know, and their illiteracy. Yeah. But if you're from one of these Norfolk or around there, Fakenham, what are these other places called? Anyway, Suffolk. Are you from Fakenham, aren't you, Catherine?
No.
You're the organiser. I heard of Fakenham. Is that Norfolk or Suffolk?
It's near Acle, actually. And it's Norfolk.
Okay. It's Norfolk. Yeah, I didn't hear it.
Great Yarmouth is Norfolk.
It stuck in my mind because it sounded a bit rude. So the town of Fakenham, I'm sure it's lovely. Hello, anyone in Fakenham? Hello.
I would have thought that's the story of your love life.
Ed, since we have a serious politician on the show, we have to talk more about immigration, especially high skilled immigration. Doctors and engineers. I have read articles in various newspapers arguing that even when these immigrants are engineers and doctors, they're still problematic. So some of the doctors are assaulting women. It doesn't really matter if they're doctors or engineers.
Do you want me to answer that?
Exactly. It doesn't matter if they're doctors or engineers.
My point is it doesn't matter. And the issue is about passports. So, you know, if we had not given out passports in Bradford in the 1950s, we wouldn't be having the problems we had now. If we had done what had traditionally been done, which is you get a visa, including even for husbands, the rest of the world does that, you know, except for the West, the rest of the world. If I go to Jamaica, it doesn't matter what job I've got, I will get a visa. Even if I'm married, I'll get a visa, a marital visa. And those will be renewed. It happens everywhere. So, you know, if somebody assaults somebody or whatever is criminal, they're out. And the problem, of course, is the second generation, because we have plenty of second generation who are ISIS doctors. So you never know what the second and third generation are going to do. They often become more and more radical. So that is the other issue.
Yeah, and also the standard that they have to be a doctor, to actually get a medical degree or an engineering degree in these countries is much lower than it is in the UK.
Exactly.
In fact,
I'd challenge that, Ed. Having taught in the UK sector for quite a while,
You didn't teach medical students before. You taught students of literature or some bollocks.
Well, yeah, but given that they couldn't write, you know, read or write most of the time, and they were the English ones, if I saw a well-written essay, I'd look on the student name to see what part of Scandinavia they were from. They weren't British.
That's true, actually. When I was teaching at the University of Aberdeen, I was doing tutorials, and it stuck in my mind that the most intelligent person in the tutorials was always an international student somewhere or other. But English literature, though, actually, because it's a very popular degree, so the grades are quite high. So even in places like Bristol, you have, or at least when I was at university 27 years ago, you had to have 3 A's A-level to do English literature there. Whereas most subjects, you only had to have 2 A's and a B to go to Oxford or Cambridge. English literature was always higher. So they were quite intelligent, the English literature students. So that's quite frightening. But no, engineering is a good proxy for the IQ of the nation. All you have to do is take what's the IQ of the engineers, and it's 2 standard deviations above the average of the nation. That's it. So once you've got the IQ of a sample of engineers from a country, then you know what the IQ of the country is. It's always 2 standard deviations higher. So they're engineers. So
I am really serious, because I was watching GB News some time ago, and somebody said, we only want smart people from India and China in the UK. And my position is simple. India and China both have an engineering problem. The quality of engineers in those countries are at a lower standard than the quality of engineers in the UK. Countries like America and the UK, they still produce higher quality science, especially the UK. The problem with the UK is commercialization. It has not been able to translate ideas into products. That's the issue. But the quality of science in China is definitely overrated. China is still known for being a retraction capital.
Yeah, but Lipton, so you know, Chinese doctors can distinguish between biological men and women, so they're already slightly ahead of ours.
But that's easier for them, though, because the East Asian race is the race with the highest level of sexual dimorphism. So
I don't think it's that difficult for us, to be honest, Ed.
No, it's not that difficult for us, but it's even easier for them because, as I just explained, East Asians have the highest level of sexual
dimorphism. Yeah, but what's even easier than something that's already pathologically easy?
Well, you might get somebody with a very small winky or a part of their vagina protruding outwards. Like
I don't think you should project your micro penis issues into this discussion, please.
I'm not projecting. I was actually talking about Lipton. But anyway, that's not the point. You could get, like you do, there was a case in Portugal of this girl, and she had a little sort of her labia majora was in the shape of a kind of a winkle, and they weren't sure, you know, exactly what to do. You get those kinds of borderline cases, and I'm saying that you get those less among East Asians than you would among whites or blacks. That's all.
A winkle or a whelk?
A winkle.
Right. Is that because the level of testosterone is generally lower, Ed?
I think it's because the environment's unstable, so the men are more likely to pump and dump, and therefore the women have to take on more masculine kind of characteristics, and so therefore you get a lower level of sexual dimorphism. The lowest level of sexual dimorphism was among the Greenlandic.
Yes.
So highest level. So it's high if they're going to pump and dump, you get high sexual. You if they're going to pump and dump, you get low. If they're going to stick around, you get dimorphism. Talking about people that are not entirely male or female, move back to Keir Starmer, which was the topic we were focusing on. So my view is it's over. You've got Lipton's just announced that you've got some private secretary that's resigned. What was it you said, Lipton?
Yes, some aides have resigned and people are calling for him to resign. It is titled PM Under Pressure. It's breaking news now.
And there's about 50 Labour MPs that have publicly said that he should resign. And Big Ange is on manoeuvres. And so I think this is just the same. This has many parallels with the Boris situation over the Chris Pincher thing.
But Ed, I really do want him to cling on for as long as is humanly possible. Just, it's great entertainment, and he's never going to stick around forever.
No, but which is better?
Joe Morris, Tom Rutland, and Wes Streeting. They urged the Prime Minister to set out a timetable for his departure as they quit on Monday.
Here's a difficult question for you, Ed. Who's shinier, Wes Streeting or David Cameron?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good question. David Cameron is very shiny because he's got this receding hairline and it's and it's shiny. But then Wes Streeting is kind of shiny all over, isn't he? Like
he's got goose fat all over, and he's buffed himself.
It's like he's been swaddled, despite the fact that he's in his 40s.
He looks like a mannequin, you know, with little sort of eyes.
He does.
It's like AI has put a baby's backside for a talc advert in a suit.
Yes, that's right. Like one of those weird TV commercials you used to get in the 90s where women would kiss their babies' asses for some reason.
I don't know why you remember that, Ed.
Well, it just sticks in my mind. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? I don't know like, if that's normal, but I didn't do that.
Ed, what's for Nanny Lowe? Ed, I want to run. I want Catherine to make me a member of the party. I want to run, Catherine. And my first policy would be remigration. I'm serious.
It's reform that they get you to run for, isn't it? Because almost all the reform candidates are Boris Wave, like you.
Now, I was going to run, Catherine, in Wales, but I wasn't qualified.
I'd like to run. I hope I'm going to run in Broadland for Restore.
But Lipton, a person ran in Scotland who is an anthropology PhD and a poet. And he doesn't have the right to stay in the country for longer than about 2 years. And he was elected at
Yes, I saw it.
Or something.
I couldn't run in Wales because of the laws in Wales, but I want to join Catherine's party and run because, unlike you, Ed, I have ambition. You have none.
I have no.
Ed has no ambition. Ed has no ambition.
Is that correct?
Yes, no, but an ambitious man with your stature, Ed, you should have been in politics a long time ago. No ambition.
Yeah, but I live in Finland. I just think that they don't want... No, it's awful. Like, I don't. I'll come back to the UK once Catherine is prime minister and things are shaken up.
No, I was just going to say. I mean, you could. I think there is a reason why Lipton's right, and that you probably could come back to the UK because I think the time is now. And I think that something really important happened in Great Yarmouth. So I know I'm, but this is unusual for that to happen.
But as it says in the Bible, I think a prophet is never recognised in his own country.
Not wanting to big yourself up or anything, Ed.
No. I'm not. I'm not saying I'm Jesus. But if I was Jesus, then
anyway, if you're going to talk about prophets, I look a lot more like Moses than you do.
Yeah, and you've moved countries as well. You're in Wales. A prophet is never recognised in their own land. That's why
Wales is just like an even more dysfunctional England.
St. Patrick was British.
Yeah. I lived in Wales for a while.
St. Patrick was only recognised as a prophet in Ireland. And I'm the same. I'm only recognised in Finland. Whereas it's a modest, humble place. Sort of
I lived in Wales for a while, and I will tell you this. The people in Wales are quite average.
They're quite fat.
Average. They're average. Intellectually, they're average people.
Look you, Lipton.
They've not. There's not that many Welsh great intellectuals that I mean.
No,
Dylan Thomas, one of the best poets of all time.
There's no Welsh architecture at all. And there's no Welsh food. It's just terrible.
Which is toast with
cheese on toast.
Barra bread or some brown stuff.
Seaweed.
What is Welsh rarebit? It's basically toast with Worcestershire sauce on cheese.
Oh, they do a good lamb. Welsh lamb is world famous.
Yeah, halal Welsh lamb.
Not for eating it.
Yeah, but it is mostly halal Welsh lamb.
Not the sheep I steal round here, no.
Oh, no, not your sheep. Well, you probably halal them at home in the backyard.
Catherine, when
I don't know what that halal is a euphemism for, but
Catherine, when you become the PM, are you going to restore the British Empire?
No.
Why not? I love empire. I really regret the decline of empire.
I accept that. But if Jamaicans, I know that lots of Jamaicans think things were better when the British were there. I know that.
Exactly.
Many think that it was better. So if the Jamaicans come and say that they would like to be restored, I'm sure we could oblige.
Yeah, it's just they go on about like crime in Brixton and stuff like this. But all the Jamaicans, and I mean actual Jamaicans that I've met personally, have been really nice.
Yeah.
So something must happen when they come to Britain that they become petty criminals and goodness knows what, because the people actually with Jamaican accents that are actually Jamaican that I've met, they've all been really, really nice. Or Trinidadians or anything like that. I've all found them quite pleasant. If you're watching from those countries, then hello. It's afternoon where you are. Yardies, Ed. Yes, Yardies. I don't know if they integrated with the culture of Brixton, the white culture of Brixton, and it was really bad. But Shakin' Stevens, Jamaican, Tommy 5023. Shakin' Stevens, Jamaican.
I wouldn't know Shakin' Stevens.
I don't think Shakin' Stevens is Jamaican.
Well, did you know that Bob Marley's father was English?
Yes.
Yes.
Did, obviously, but yeah, most many people don't.
Yeah, he's half. Well, you can see from looking at him. He's half caste. Yeah. Okay.
This should be the view, Ed. This show should be the view. The view. It should be on the view.
It isn't. It isn't, because Catherine is better looking than Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh. Yeah, but Lipton looks like Whoopi Goldberg, don't you, Lipton? on a bad day.
That is because the level of sexual dimorphism is so low. Anyway, we're about halfway through. So to those of you with you, hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, online public house. It's on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science and stuff going on in the news and all kinds of malarkey. And we have a habit of not exactly sticking to the point, which today is Keir Starmer. And we'll go on to it in a minute, which is the collapse of the two-party system and whatever. If you are new, then you please subscribe. Could you subscribe on YouTube and leave a like for the algorithm and hit the bell and all that stuff. And subscribe on my Substack. That's jollyheretic.com, where I put almost based science I don't dare put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make. And where, if you like what I do, you can support with the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Dr. Paul Taylor, and he is a recovering academic that researches that bloke with the lisp and whatever his name is. What's his name?
Slavojizek.
Slavojizek, that's the fellow. So he was editor of the Journal of Slavojizek Studies. So could you go and subscribe to his channel, which is called Readers of the Lost Art, which at some vague point in the future I will be on to talk about.
Yeah, can I give a quick plug, Ed? I'm doing trying to make my way through the whole of the Odyssey as my response to the abomination that was the trailer of Christopher Nolan's new film.
Oh, yeah, that.
So I'm going through the Odyssey and showing what people are missing by watching the film, and then on Wednesday I'm doing a video on partially on Viz.
Ooh. Well, you know, yeah. I've been a subscriber to Viz since I was since I moved to Finland, and I've got every single Viz since 1996.
Well, you will have to watch with interest.
Oh well, I think we should do something together on Viz. I know everything about Viz. I've got all of the books. I've got. Hang on.
I've set him off, Catherine.
Catherine. Paul is really smart, but you went to Paul is really smart. But you went to Oxford.
This is the sausage sandwich.
But you could be smarter. It is just noise. It is just a noisemaker.
Hang on.
Yeah, it is just a noisemaker.
the clown's head, and the butcher's dustbin, and so I don't know. I've got loads and loads of the old Viz. I've watched with dismay. And it's become slightly politically correct. Sid the Sexist is set in Whitley Bay. Suddenly there's an Asian landlord at their pub. And then there's a particular guy. It's the guy that does, what's the detective called? Jack Black. And he's become that artist. He's the one that's politically correct. He's the one that will draw in foreigners and whatever. So, but otherwise it's remained pure. Of course, the fat slags as well has remained here. Okay, subscribe, please. Link is in the description to read the Lost Art. Then Catherine Blakelock of infamy with regard to her involvement in various political parties, currently Rupert Lowe and Restore Britain. Do you have a channel, Catherine?
No, I have a Twitter account. I don't have a channel. So
follow Catherine on Twitter. Yeah. I'd probably just put a name in. Probably find it's at probably Catherine Blakelock.
At Blakelock BP, that's what it is. Yeah,
Blakelock BP. Yeah, British Petroleum. Yes. And then finally we have Mr. Lipton Matthews, who, as you can see, is the wealthiest of all of us and lives in a massive house. Could you please subscribe to his channel? That's Lipton Matthews, and he has various books that are available.
Boston African Delusions. I just wrote a book, Catherine. It's called Boston African Delusions.
Okay.
And he's sexing it up.
Right, okay.
we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic, Mr. Quinn, and he's written the following poem in light of today's discussion, which we've gone off topic of a little bit, is this the end for Sir Keir? His exit must surely be near. He suffered some pain with young men from Ukraine, but we're meant to believe he's not queer. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. And if you'd like Mr. Quinn's, I would have thought that it would be the boys from Ukraine that would have suffered the pain.
He's not a top.
I think he's a top. I think he's.
No.
Do
you think he's capable of showing any form of dominance or decisiveness whatsoever?
Well, he did get BPM somehow or other.
Yeah, but in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. It's like Darwin's waiting room, the Labour bench.
There is no king or one-eyed man, and if there was, no one would know. Everybody's blind.
Do you do weddings and bar mitzvahs, Ed, singing?
That's not my song. It's a chap I was at university with called Ross Devlin that wrote that. But cheers, Ross, if you're watching. So you're saying that Keir Starmer is a hungry pig bottom?
I said allegedly he's not a top.
You're saying that he can't trust a fart?
Don't follow them, Catherine. You'll get sued.
You're saying he it's drafty down there. All right, so good. So subscribe, and also could you buy Mr. Quinn's book of jolly heretic poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. Okay, now I want to go back to trying to stick on the topic to some extent. So the next thing that has changed severely is the two-party system. Now, I can only assume that in the good old days when I was a boy, everybody voted Conservative or Labour or Liberal Democrat if they lived in the South West or Kingston upon Thames. And it very slowly changed that you could feel that a Liberal Democrat vote wasn't a wasted vote, and you'd do it because you were a bit avant-garde. Or when I was at university, you were a bit left-wing. So I think in the 2001 election, the Liberals might even have taken Durham, because we were there during term time. But that was basically how it was. And then it was considered, other than in European elections, where it was poor representation, a wasted vote to vote for anything else. And so you didn't. And so they were kept in check. And I suppose it's a sort of Ceausescu moment that the general feeling is that everyone's so pissed off, and they know it, that they're all saying to each other, oh, I'm going to vote Reform. Once enough people are aware that other people are also thinking, oh, I'm going to vote Reform, then they do. And you have all these fascinating people elected that say we should melt down Nigerians to fill in potholes.
Yes, Imo. Nasty man.
And it's ridiculous because Nigerians don't melt, they burn. I love that. I love the way that they got Hope Not Hate to vet all these different candidates, that the people from the Lotus Eaters were chucked out for saying things which are now party policy. And the most bizarre people with the most ridiculous, silly opinions have now been elected to office, Catherine.
Well, and a Bangladeshi immigrant, and, you know, people who couldn't speak English, basically, were candidates. The Reform is just a big mess. I mean, I really do think it's a weak party, and it was just scraping the bottom trying to find people, all sorts of people, anybody, to just get enough people. And so already, like, you've had, and if Nigel's got any history, half of them will be with Restore in the next 6 months.
Yes, I mean, their views are fairly right on. They're fairly gung-ho. And they would be far more consistent. There was a piece in The Observer on Sunday which went through in detail the terrible views of these people. And it was basically a kind of promotion for them, really, and for Restore as well. Because you can't, if people are genuinely pissed off in Britain, then eventually, which I think they are, then eventually you're going to run out of people that are diplomatic. You're going to run out of people that don't say, you know, quite undiplomatic things about foreigners or about the left. So one of the things they go on about is, oh, well, they believe in the conspiracy that we can't mention on YouTube, so don't mention it, Lipson, please, or Paul. But the conspiracy that's associated with Renault Camus. And of course they're going to say that. Like, you're running out of people that won't say that. And obviously the grassroots of a political party is always more right-wing than or more left-wing than, depending on the party. The people that are in charge.
I actually think with Restore it might be slightly different, that the grassroots is slightly to the left of the young Zoomers in Restore, because the Zoomers in general are much more radical either on the Green or on the Restore front than anybody over 40. I mean, really radical. They're absolutely pissed off. I mean, really, but big time. So I think that from what I saw, the, you know, you've obviously got Rupert and you've got some, and I would call the boomer idea, people who are over 40, not just in age, but that more sort of CivNat conservatism. But then you've got the Zoomers are much more radical. So that was my impression, that the voters, it's the only party on the right where the voters and the voters were slightly to the left of where the party is.
The voters for Restore are to the left of where the party
slightly is. I mean, not massively, but slightly. Yes, I think so. With Reform, and the Conservatives, they're massively to the right of where they are. But I think at the moment, the general public is still coming round to the idea of remigration. They're not quite there yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were as recently as 1999, which I regard as recent because I'm old. The British National Party dropped the policy of repatriation because it was considered too toxic.
Yeah.
And now this policy is back in. This policy that was considered absolutely repugnant, the idea that you should say that somebody that had come here in 1948 should 40 years later, or 50 years later, be repatriated. It was so appalling. But then a lot has changed since. And also there was the illegal immigration, which wasn't an issue so much then. People came legally. You can see. But I mean, isn't Restore, it's just going to take votes from Reform, isn't it? And therefore hand the seat to Labour
In the same way as Reform took the votes from Conservative. This is just sort of an absolute rubbish argument because we got Starmer because of Reform. So that does basically, and I think the view is that we are going to be better than Reform because we think Reform are very weak. And they're not, I mean, if you look at what they've done in councils, some of the Kent County councils, which is, you know, their flagship, they've moved over to Restore. And if you hear the stories about what goes on, it's just awful. So I think that there's a lot of new people in Reform who've never been Restore, who've never been in politics, and there's a lot more professional people who are coming. I mean, I was talking to a lady today who's never joined a party, who worked for the National Crime Agency for 20 years. You know, I mean, these are people who are very serious. So I think that there's a higher quality caliber of people. And I think that, and also I think we're more passionate. I think Reform has had so many arguments and they've had Zia Yusuf chucking people out on the ground. And then I'm getting in the Conservatives, Nadim, whatever his name is, Zardawi, getting these people in that I think that they're weak. And I think actually the fight will probably be with the rump of the Conservative Party, still more problematic. It's really stuck there than Reform, because Reform basically just gave their votes from a Conservative to Reform and they'll just move to the next party. They're not stuck there for 20, 30 years.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I'd preface my comments by saying I got triggered when Catherine mentioned at the very beginning the gentleman's agreement with Nigel Farage, because Lipton and I can testify we had a gentleman's agreement with you, Ed, that we paid £100 per episode, and that never occurred. Did it, Lipton?
Yes, exactly. I'm a black man who's basically a slave on this show, working for free.
And it's not a good look, Ed. It's not a good look.
You like it like that. It's in your genes. You like it like that.
I was going to quickly moving on and protecting you, Ed, from yourself. I just find I'm interested in Catherine's comments about the Zoomers. And what worries me is the lack of any genuine chance of decent discourse when people actually politically disagree. The intransigence you see on both the radical left and the radical right is what I find most scary.
Yeah.
And I find a lot of the recent current developments, the people have asked why this visceral hatred for Starmer. I think it all began to go wrong with Brexit, not because the decision went a particular way, but because the losers withheld their consent and then did everything to stop it happening and thereby completely undermined any pretense that they believed in democracy. So they believed in democracy for decades when it suited them. And the minute there was a big democratic vote they didn't like. And I think that's had a delayed effect. I think that's seeped into the body politic for the last few years. And people are so, everyone's always disillusioned with politics. But I think that was a profound thing that happened, that the actual living proof that they didn't believe in the most basics of losers' consent. And when losers' consent goes, everything goes. It's a free-for-all.
Are you talking about Zoomers or everybody?
Everybody. Two different points. Everybody. I think older people would fulfil what I've just said about being completely disillusioned at the loss of losers' consent. The other people, the Zoomers, have been brought up in an environment whereby everyone is ideologically in one camp or the other. And if anyone disagrees with you, they are automatically evil. They've got no intellectual curiosity, and this just feeds on itself. And they're living in a social media world where everything's black and white, everything's like or dislike. There's no nuance, there's no subtlety. And it feeds on itself, and it's created a horrible atmosphere to the point that you get pathological positions now. So the leader of Plaid Cymru is saying that he doesn't believe in, he rejects the whole concept of an illegal immigrant. He said that in an interview. So, and people don't believe in reporting people for actual crimes. The Green Party policy now is not to report people, to prevent. So people are going to get stabbed in future because people have this visceral dislike of any type of authority. People, mad as it sounds, people don't believe in law and order in certain parts of the body politic. You saw this, and we tend to be behind America by 10 to 15 years. But the whole farce over BLM and, you know, taking away the police from inner cities, and the people that suffered most were black business owners. Complete lawlessness. Anyone poor living in the ghetto is on the receiving end of a complete lack of security. And that's happening in our cities now, more and more.
Yeah. Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There's no question about it. I think COVID also had an effect, and I think the education system. I mean, I talked to some of these Zoomer people who are in Restore, and they say, you know, the stuff, especially young men, the stuff that they were taught, and this just complete rejection of it entirely. But I think I don't see how we can have a civil war because we're just not armed, and we have, you know, effectively have 2,000 groups, and we have coalitions of groups. You know, we've got obviously the Muslim bloc and stuff, but we are effectively an aging country. But we can have really terrible internecine warfare, riots, inner city riots, one group against another group. And I would say I got into politics one of my first sort of things I ever saw was when Sikhs were getting killed in my bathroom in India when I was 23 or 22, when I was in a university when Mrs. Gandhi was shot and she was killed by a Sikh, and they were just rampaging. And India has been great at communal violence, I mean, ethnic and communal violence. And then I spent time in Nepal, which has got 30 million people and 70 million groups. Every single person votes ethnically. And I said, this is just a completely ungovernable country, and this is what we're going to get. Because, you know, you've got in Newham 2,000 languages, and we are going to have these ghettoisation with flare-ups here and there, with a state that is effectively run by civil servants who aren't interested in doing anything except going to another meeting and stalling anything happening. So, I mean, that's the biggest fear, is even if you did get a reform or a restore government with a big majority, that the civil servants just refuse to do anything, as they did.
Playing by the rule, having rules and rules that you should play by, that in some ways that's the problem. So I remember reading about how when it was a total crisis in Britain in the late 70s and everybody was on strike, there was a... I think Theresa Gorman, who used to be a Conservative MP, was involved. They set up a de facto postal service to get the letters delivered because the postal service was on strike. And of course, in those days, everything was the post. A lot of people didn't have telephones in the late 70s. So they went outside the rules. And even with this thing today about Keir Starmer, they keep going on about the bloody rules and how, oh, there has to be 81 people or something like this. That's 15% of the parliamentary party that signs to do something. Everything has to be done by the rules. And Keir Starmer, the interesting comment he made, oh, if I resign, it will plunge the country into crisis. Well, why will it do that? What? Because a system of rules and aren't being abided by. Bollocks. We used to change prime ministers all the time in the 18th century. There was this idea of having long-term prime ministers is a very new thing.
But you know, Ed, I was going to say one of the things that depresses me the most is it wouldn't even be so bad paradoxically if, for example, I totally agree with Catherine's point about the civil servants. But let's just say the police, that they've increasingly failed to do their job at the most basic level. If they were functionally incapable of doing their job at all, that would be one thing. I think what drives people insane is the fact that when they want to, they can actually be draconian, they can use full force, yeah. But it's only for certain demographic groups like Lucy Connolly.
Yeah.
So it's the sense of raging injustice summarised by the two-tier quip. But it's absolutely true. The one, you know, remaining British value is a sense of fair play. It's the one thing we're allowed to have left. And they've stomped all over that.
Yes, indeed. In Epsom, they're out on the streets with horses and whatever because a girl was this word that apparently is now so rude that we can't say it on YouTube. I don't know when that happened. But outside a church, Methodist church in Epsom. But then if it's a certain demographic running riot in Clapham, that's absolutely fine and nothing is done and is seen not to be done. And then the nonsense of you think back in the 80s when it was the miners riots and all that kind of thing. And you'd see the police on the telly and they were fit young blokes that could win a fight. And now it's female midgets.
Go on, Catherine, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that has happened, I think that is from the internet and from Twitter and from Elon Musk and from what's been going on in Minnesota, is this sort of rise of the amateur investigator. And I don't know if you've seen this on Twitter, but these people coming out all day long with Birmingham City Council just paid this office, which is sort of some tip, with a boarded up sign, £2.4 million. Or there was one in Bolton today, which was a hotel where Bolton County Council was paying them £35,000 a month. And yet their average room price was £28 to £45. It was some sort of hostel, which would come, even if it was totally full, to 16. So, you know, £16,000 a month has disappeared. And then you look at these. And that's what Rupert Lowe has been doing and other people, these sort of inventories of half of Newham's council has got millions and millions of pounds, which are just miscellaneous. So they don't say where they are. And this money issue really drives people crazy. The fact, you know, it goes back to the fact of all the houses in London that normal people can't afford to go to London and have to pay £140 a night to look down on a whole pile of people who are in, you know, who've just arrived on a boat from Somalia and are in houses worth hundreds of thousands of pounds. And it does, it's so, you know, we've just got this corrupt state. And I think that it's these money flows that really get people because at the same time, they're getting taxed more and more. They can't, you know, their electricity bill's going up, their petrol's going up, everything, and they're finding life difficult. And that's the sort of turning point, I think, for people.
It's insane that you go to somewhere, as I have been to this studio there, in Lambeth Walk, okay, so right by the Archbishop's Palace, round there. And it's a massive council estate. And there's Somalis everywhere, conspicuously so. And this is the think of the price on the actual market of the real estate in Lambeth Walk. In Lambeth Walk, you're literally right by the city, right by Parliament, just over the Thames. and it's a council state, and it's a substantially foreign council state. It's absolutely, it's quite extraordinary.
Well, the other thing that radicalizes the students is this accommodation, and I've got other friends, but I mean, one of my daughters was at UCL, so she lived in Camden in a, you know, a 1970s tower block full of concrete, you know, the concrete steps going up. And she was in a three-bedroom house where they were using the fourth room as a bedroom, and they were basically paying £200 a week each. This is a girl who's got 4 A-stars and is in the top 3% of economics at UCL, as were her friends, and she's paying this whilst the entire block is full of people who've just arrived who are getting absolutely everything paid for.
Could I just throw something else in? Because even that's all atrocious and I couldn't agree more, but there's another relatively unacknowledged problem. If you think of the levels of technocracy in the NHS that mean money is wasted in the billions because these are non-productive people. And this has been going on for decades, and there are structural issues like social care has been broken in the UK for a good 30 years. And for every year, the social care isn't fixed. Huge tranches of the NHS are taken up with bed blockers. The system's backed up. It doesn't work. And compound interest and the compound amounts of money. This, if you amortized it out, is millions and billions of pounds of inefficiency in government that could be tackled with the social care is one little issue. And that's not little. But how can government upon government fail to deal with it for decades when everyone knows it's a structural issue? It's beyond me. It makes no sense.
It takes a total crisis. We're so rich. That's the thing. We're so rich. I don't live in Britain. I haven't lived there for 21 years. But I keep in touch what's going on in the UK, obviously. And the country is so wealthy that it takes a lot for people to be, you know, really pissed off. I mean, do you know the price of food in relation to income? If you go back to the 80s or whatever, it was way higher than it is now. People moan about the cost of living crisis. It's not a cost of living crisis. It's a cost of decadence crisis.
I'd agree with you, except one of the spanner in the works is you're not accounting for there's a whole generation of Zoomers who are still living at home who are never going to buy a house. And that is one of the that's one of the factors
people
that isn't
didn't
being
buy house. People didn't even really, most people didn't. If you go back to about 1960, only about 40% of people were homeowners.
Right, but that's still going to be, that's 40% more than the current generation of Zoomers. That's going to be about 5% are going to be able to afford their own home. When I bought my first house, it was about 2.5 times my salary. Yeah. Well, that's a dream world now. That's not going to happen for anyone. So when you say we're wealthy in a way, everything's relative, but compared to what UK nationals had in terms of assets, there's a whole generation of people who are never going to get on the housing ladder. They're never going to have good pensions. And that's when things are going to get really tough.
Well, I agree.
Sorry. Catherine.
Sorry, Lipton hasn't said anything.
He's frozen.
I was about to say that I agree with Paul, because I was reading earlier today that a company in the US wanted to cut some pension benefits. And it's quite obvious that we're entering into a new era where for a number of years, we're going to be experiencing different generations of graduates who will never work. That's not implausible anymore.
We have a terrible situation with the housing position, because, I mean, I actually believe that it will self-correct eventually, with enormous pain and misery whilst it does it. And we're already seeing that in central London, and obviously it's been helped by Rachel from accounts, but we've got this massive block of old people who've got all these assets, supposed assets, and nobody who can possibly afford them. And they haven't really started moving yet. I mean, if you look at what happened to Japan with their houses, where they had the oldest demographic in the world, they've always been ahead of everybody else. you basically can get a house now 30 minutes outside Osaka for nothing, a nice house. You've got this, you can end up with a situation where houses just have to collapse. They have to come down in price.
But Catherine, even if that's true, I'm not saying it isn't, there's another problem. If that takes 10, 20, 30 years to occur, it might sound a relatively minor point, but this is just casual empiricism, things I've observed. These Zoomers I'm speaking about are still living with their parents. It goes directly to the fact that they're a good 10, 15 years less mature than we used to be because they're in this permanent adolescence.
Yeah.
And that feeds into how they behave, that how they think about politics. Because, I honestly don't think anyone should have the vote until they've paid their first pay slip and have paid tax. Because this is all free money they're voting on. Because they're not earning, they don't own their own house. They only know about tax, theoretically, with VAT. Or what they spend, in consumption goods.
Even in food. I mean, I remember when my daughter went to university, she said, oh, my God, these grapes cost a lot. And this was a child who was just eating three packets without thinking about it. Like, oh, my God, they cost £2. Yes, they've always cost quite a lot, and they don't realise this. I agree with you. But the other big divide is between those Zoomers who have parents with houses and those people who don't have parents with no houses or in no assets whatsoever, of which you see quite a lot in Great Yarmouth. And they have no way of getting any money because the parents with the houses are often subsidising, helping, but the others, they've just got no way to get anything.
Yeah, to buy my house, admittedly in northern Finland, I had to get four guarantors. I had to get two. They wouldn't accept my parents as guarantors because they were foreign. Which was probably illegal, but they wouldn't accept them. They said, they're not Finnish, we're not accepting them as guarantors. So we had to get my wife's parents as guarantors and then take out insurance for the rest of the guarantee. But in Finland, we're about a generation behind. It's the cost of housing is going up because there's loads of housing. If you want a cheap house, you can get a cheap house, but you have to live in the countryside. And you can get massive houses. I'm talking 300 square metres, 400 square metres for pittance in the Finnish countryside. But the Finnish countryside is utterly depopulating in favour of about five cities. And in those places, the cost of housing has shot up even since I bought this house in 2007, when I was 26. It's nowhere near as bad, but it's getting exactly the same way because everybody wants to now live in a small number of cities. We're not overpopulated, though. Well, I don't know why I'm saying this. The situation's not really comparable. It's hell in the UK. It's insane. I mean, my parents bought their house in, 1982? And it was two times income in Wimbledon. And I think they bought it for about £20,000. And now you can imagine what a house is worth.
I bought my house in 1998, roughly, and it was 2.5 times my salary. So it's not even that long ago. This is how quickly things have spiraled out of control.
The big collapse. You remember we had the 87 rise. That was the sort of peak. And then we had the 16% interest rates and the big collapse into 94, which carried
negative. There was negative equity, and then it went back up. And then it's just ridiculous. I mean, my grandfather bought his council house in Winchester for £6,000 in about 1988. And then it was sold when he died for
£250,000. Yeah.
Who got the money?
It's absolute. Sorry?
you got an inheritance.
I should imagine so, yes. But it's absolutely insane. And he didn't want to buy it. He was like, council houses, what can't afford houses? But he was sucked into the Thatcher, revolution.
The irony was I only bought my house because I had an elderly ill dog and I was living in rented accommodation and the dog got evicted, not me. So I bought a house for the dog.
I'm glad, Paul, that you didn't say that my impression of my grandfather from Hampshire sounded Welsh. Thank you. Thank you for that small mercy. a man that I spent 29 years of my life listening to, at least I could do an impression of him. Like, it did not sound Welsh.
That was out of familial respect.
Actually, you were going to say, well, your grandfather was from Hampshire, but he was born in Rhondda. I mean, like, what? Lipton, has there been any more news on Quest Arlen?
No, I haven't seen any.
No more change. But I think it's. But we haven't moved on to the change though, the switch. So, Catherine, do you think that this change, this people voting reform, will genuinely be transferred over to parliamentary elections, or is it just people just think local elections get nothing done? So I'll just
Yes, it's definitely going to. I mean, I think there's so many people who will never ever vote Conservative again, ever.
And now that's happening to Labour. So this is what makes everything so interesting. Yeah. Labour are absolutely finished now. I mean, under no doubt whatsoever. The Tories are finished because of the Boris wave and everything they did.
Didn't do.
Yeah, just complete neglect and incompetence. And Labour claim they've inherited a mess. But if the mess is the cake, Labour are the most finely tuned icing on that crappy cake. So no one's ever going to vote for Labour.
I blame for this all of you stupid bastards watching. I was watching an episode of TFI Friday the other day from 1997, and they had an interview with the bird, she's called Courtney Cox, that plays Monica, who, interestingly, is a very different personality from Monica, a very different, much more quiet and demure kind of person than the character she was playing. And I was probably hanging around outside the Riverside Studios at the time with my friends looking for autographs when that was filmed. And you bloody people that voted for this smiling Cheshire cat pointlessly, completely pointlessly, and now you say, I used to vote for the left. I don't know if I'm including you in this, Catherine. Did you vote New Labour in 1997?
I didn't vote to 214 ever.
Well, anyway.
I could be counted as a neutral, but helped it, I suppose.
And then the country went mental when Princess Diana died, and it became acceptable to cry in public, which even as a 16-year-old I thought was completely unacceptable and wrong.
Except, Ed, I cried that day because I've said before, I think, on this programme, Liverpool was supposed to play Newcastle. It was a Sunday. And Liverpool were live on TV at 4 p.m. and they cancelled the game because someone can't drive in an underground bloody motorway.
No, exactly. That was the shift. That was the shift. Diana dying, that was a watershed moment. And you bastards, all of you people that voted New Labour, and you know you did. You caused all this. You gave them two whopping majorities. They could do everything they wanted to.
Remember that, Ed. Now's not the time for sound bites, but I feel the hand of history upon my shoulder.
Exactly. That was the Northern Ireland, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which, ironically, now is probably the best place in the UK to be.
Great Yarmouth.
It's overwhelmingly.
I think we should all turn up at Darren F. McGee's house and squat. Are you up for it, Lipton?
Okay.
Lipton, are you up for it?
Yes, I can hear you.
Should we all go and squat in Darren's house?
No, I agree. I agree. And do you know why I agree? I told you before we started the show.
Crab. Yeah, what?
I said crab.
Oh, right. You've got crab. You've got crabs. Well, how did you get crabs, Lipton?
I don't have crabs.
You've got crabs?
No,
have you tried the ointment, Lipton?
You've got pubic lice.
Is that why your hair's so short?
Yeah, Lipton, the worst thing, worse than pubic lice, is to have pubic mice.
Yeah, we established that before, didn't we?
We did. They're very small mice and they live off your knob cheese.
Dad.
They're very hard to get rid of. They're very hard to get rid of pubic mice. But you have to get a pubic cat.
No, you don't. You get a groinal mouse trap.
Okay.
It can go wrong, that plan, I admit, but...
I can see how it can go wrong. Yeah,
you kill the mice and operate on yourself inadvertently.
Yeah, you circumcise yourself, and but also kill the mice. But that's
the kosher mouse trap.
Yeah, but if you're going to get, or the indeed the halal mouse trap. But if you're going to get pubic mice, then you've got to be careful who you sleep with, Lipton. And if a woman is basically if her lady garden is crawling in mice, then that's telling you, Lipton, leave it alone. Leave it.
You see, Lipton, everyone who gets to reside in my basement is fumigated first.
Yeah, otherwise...
So I'm sensible.
Otherwise, Paul's triangle of shame could be covered with yeah. But anyway, back onto the issue of Keir Starmer. I augur and prognosticate that he'll be... I don't think he's going to be here by the summer.
He may not be here by the end of this programme.
I think he's going to be here by the end of this programme, but he's holding on. But he won't be here by the end of the summer.
I think he might be gone by the end of the week.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
very possibly. I was hedging my bets there with regard to the. But I don't. It's weird. He's so different from Boris, isn't he? But yet so similar. He's. Have you met Boris, Catherine?
No.
No, I haven't. I got a letter from him once, though, rejecting an article that I wrote and recommending I send it somewhere else when he was editor of Spectator. Now, we'll have a super chat from P Pants J in Texas. Can we dress Lipton as the cat from Red Dwarf? Hang on a minute.
Catherine can be Holly. Ed can be Rimmer.
I must confess, I've never seen Red Dwarf. I've not watched it. Yeah,
because the guy, I've forgotten his name, but he was a Scouser, so I could play him.
Oh, he was the half black Liverpudlian fellow.
Yeah.
Craig Charles. Yeah. Craig Charles. Yes, you could do. I suppose I look a bit like the guy that was from Gordon Britus. He was in it, wasn't he?
No, you look like the cat.
I don't remember.
With your slicked back hair.
He's black, isn't he? That actor, the cat?
Yeah, but you look like him. Just forget that you're obsessed with colour. Forget the colour of his skin.
All right.
Your style was very much like the ship's cat.
Okay, I should watch it. I've never actually watched it. It's ironic, because I'm writing a new book about situation comedy. I started it today, but I shall. So, Catherine, so your thoughts are we're wrapping up now. So, over the next sort of 10 years or so, what do you augur?
Well, we personally, like in Restore, do not want a quick election because we're not ready. So, obviously, I think if there was an election right now, Reform would do very, very well. What do I see? I mean, I have to say that I'm not really hopeful or very optimistic about things because I think there's just such a big mess. And so I think we will get significantly poorer. I think we can have more violence than we've seen, whatever party we get in. And, and eventually, hopefully, we might crawl out the other side. But. You know, I think the next 10 years is going to be extremely difficult. And hopefully we would get a Restore government. But then, I mean, literally this civil service problem of trying to get anything done is, 90% of them need to be fired. You need to start again. I think if we fired 90% of the Home Office right now, as well as getting rid of Keir Starmer, it wouldn't make the foggiest bit of difference to anybody anywhere. Because they just let everybody in anyway, so we just say, well, we'll let everybody in, so we don't need them. I find the monumental mess of the mess that's been created is of biblical proportions, and that is without conflicts like it's the Islamists, which are a major problem.
Things weren't in that bad a mess on the 1st of May 1997, I would aver. So what is it do you think are the key factors behind why it's become such a mess?
The increase in the state, the increase in uselessness of the state, the increase of technology to be oppressive, multiculturalism, which just means that, people have no No idea. I mean, we were eventually divided by class and money. Now we're divided. Every single group has its own class and money.
And I do think it sounds like it wouldn't be a major issue, but the 50% of people going to university actually created massive problems. It created this lanyard class. It created an ideologically, you know, madras-like conditions for how youngsters think now. It was incredibly culturally destructive. And it stopped vocational training in its tracks. It did loads of indirect harm and direct harm.
I mean, AI is going to kill the middle class. AI is going to, there's going to be no, almost no graduate jobs. You don't need, I think you're going to have this extreme bizarre situation where parents that have been to university are going to say to their kids, for God's sake, don't go to university. And it's this difficult situation because we tend to value status over money for some reason, but we do. We will trade a certain amount of money for status. And obviously think everybody knows already, even if you just work on the trains, even as a driver, just as one of those people that's a conductor, you'll earn more than a lot of people that are university lecturers, who in turn earn less than school teachers. And you're going to have to get a situation where you know, I'll have to sit down and say to my son, don't be silly like your dad. Don't waste your time getting a PhD. Don't do that. Get yourself a trade.
And I agree.
What trade will it be? It will be manly trade, because robotics is nowhere near as far ahead as AI. So it's going to be things like plumbing, being an electrician, being a mechanic.
Male strippers.
That sort of male strippers, that sort of thing. And then it's going to be, women won't do that, but then security guards, but you'll need carers and that sort of thing, high trust jobs. So then you'll get a sexual divide. But then interestingly, then the men will be more physical, so they'll have higher testosterone because they'll be moving about, and that will make them more right-wing and more conservative. Because it does. If you inject left-wing men with testosterone, they become more right-wing. So,
male strippers with six packs are incredibly right-wing. That's true.
That is also well known. Yeah, there's very few left-wing WWF wrestlers.
Yeah, true.
They were all Hulk Hogan, RIP, came out in favour of the Donald, didn't they?
Well, the only thing as well is if there is increasing violence, and I do see eventually women moving slowly but becoming, because they obviously used to be more right wing than men in the 1950s and 60s, I think up to about the 1980s. So I think it's the security that there's no problem, that everything is fine, we don't need men, that they will move as violence increases, then that is a possibility. But I mean, the other thing you look at when you go around somewhere like Great Yarmouth, you go canvassing, is just the unfitness of the society, the number of people who are basically quite young, who can't walk, or who are obese, or who are...
Yeah, if I had money now, I'd invest in chafing cream. It's cream that I saw an advert on telly late at night. You put it on the inside of your thighs when your thighs rub together because you're morbidly obese. Now, that is an industry people could invest in.
Or plasters. They could put plasters on their thighs to stop...
No, they just come off. Chafing cream. You need to let the flesh slide off.
They come off because of all the sweat, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Be sweating like that baby stuff you put on, that white sort of thick cream stuff you put. Yeah, babies have it.
Chafing
cream. Okay, well, that's the future, chaps.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyone invests in the markets, chafing cream. That was a top
tip. Chafing cream and any problems with pubic mice. Okay, so pubic cats. All right, so I would like to thank Catherine for coming on. It's been a jolly interesting and useful discussion. And we will see you all next week, folks. And hopefully Big Ange will be the Prime Minister by then. Or perhaps Wes the Mannequin. And we will see you all next week. And tally-ho. And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Lovely to meet you.